Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I'm here to help you lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs or anything, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to call in and talk with me after the introduction, the number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And you can tweet me at Win the Diet War. So in the last week, we lost two icons of comedy, Dick Gregory and Jerry Lewis. Both of them impacted the world far beyond the realm of just comedy. Dick Gregory with his activism, and Jerry Lewis with his involvement in trying to find a cure for muscular dystrophy. So what does this have to do with weight loss and dieting? Well, bear with me because I am going to get to that. I'm going to tie it all together, I promise. So thinking about these two comedians made me think about another comedy icon, George Carlin, who famously talked about the seven words you could not say on television. Of course, that was like 50 years ago, and now those words are said all the time. But at that time, seven words that you could not say on TV. He got people thinking. So in his way, he was a social activist, challenging the way we view culture and language. And that made me think about the way we talk to and about ourselves. So I decided to come up with a list of words we should not say to ourselves. So unless you were homeschooled or raised on some other planet, you have probably sometime in your life heard the expression, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. You ever hear that one? Sticks and stones? Well, guess what? It's totally wrong. It's absolutely wrong because broken bones can heal. Broken bones can be almost new, like new again. But words can cause pain that never heals. Words can break you. Words can weigh heavily on you. So it's bad enough when someone else says hurtful things. But what about the way you talk to yourself? So today, I'm going to talk about the seven words that make you feel bad. And I'm going to share some other expressions that do the opposite. That's something that is encouraging to enhance your self-esteem, not detract from it. So when you take off the weight of the word, you're likely to feel better. Okay, so the first word is but. And I am not talking anatomically. I mean but as in saying, yeah, I got that promotion, but that was just because I worked really hard. If I were really smart, I wouldn't have had to work so hard. Or, I feel pretty good today about myself, but that could change tomorrow. Or, wow, I walked my fastest walk on that hike, and it was great, but you know what? Other people are still faster than I am. So the word but and the sentences and sentiments that follow it usually undo any good feelings you have about yourself. So instead of cutting down on carbs or changing things in your diet, try eliminating the word but from your vocabulary. Then you're left with, I got a promotion. I feel pretty good today. I walked my fastest time on that hike. And that feels a lot better, doesn't it? Don't take your accomplishments or your good feelings away from yourself with that nasty three-letter word, the B word. Okay, next word is can't. So think about the word can. I can. That brings to mind possibility, things that can happen, good things, positive things. When your thoughts are along the lines of, I can do this. I can be happy. I can have a good day. I can have a good life. I can get this job. I can meet someone wonderful. I can have a happy life. hey, you feel good, you feel optimistic. And you know what? When you feel good, you're less likely to turn to food for comfort or to get that good feeling or distraction or numb out or whatever you're using it for. But put a not at the end of can or make it a contraction and you have cannot or can't. And that is a word that instantly makes you feel bad. I can't eat that. I can't lose weight. I can't stay on my eating plan. I can't take care of myself. Oh, horrible. Like, it's depressing just saying it. It's like a complete bummer. But eliminate the word can't from your vocabulary. Unless it's along the lines of, I can't be mean to myself because I don't deserve it. So as Henry Ford once famously said, whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right. So believe in yourself. The next time you find yourself saying you can't do something, stop and ask yourself, why not? When I was a kid, I used to love this book called The Little Engine That Could. It was my brother's book because I guess gender stereotypes say that little girls wouldn't like books about trains, but I happen to like it. And it's about an engine that's asked to do something impossible, pull another big train up a mountain. And so the little engine had this mantra, I think I can. And as he slowly goes up the mountain, for some reason this train is a boy, he says over and over, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can, I can. And against all odds, he does. And you can too. Whatever mountain you're trying to climb, it's going to be a lot easier to get to the top when you believe that you can do it. If you tell yourself that you can do something, whether it's losing weight or getting a new job or going on a date or whatever it is you want to do, if you encourage yourself and believe in yourself, you're a lot more likely to do what you set out to do. Okay, so here is another word, one of the seven words that you cannot say, and it's actually three different words, but they are often used together, and they all mean the same thing, and that's dumb, stupid, idiot. Okay, yes, three different words, but people often say to themselves, oh my God, I'm such a dumb, stupid idiot. How could I have eaten that? Or anyway, you get the idea. It's all the same word, even though they're different. They mean the same thing. You know, I can't believe I went off my diet. I'm such an idiot. You know, of course, any one of these words is bad enough, and they make you feel terrible. So think about this. If a friend of yours said, I can't believe I ate all those cookies at the baby shower. What would you say to your friend? Would you say, what's with you, you stupid idiot? Or would you say, hey, don't beat yourself up. Well, you know, why do you think you ate them? Or, you know, you didn't have that many cookies. Or if you did, hey, maybe something's going on. Talk to me. There is a great quote. I have talked about this before. I love, love, love it. It's, if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left. Kind of says it all. So the next time you're beating yourself up for what you ate, what you didn't eat, what you weigh, how you didn't exercise, anything you're beating yourself up for, ask yourself what you'd say to a friend who is telling you the same thing. Assuming, of course, that you're nice to your friends, I'm going to assume you are. If you wouldn't say it to a friend or to a child, then do not say it to yourself. Do not call yourself dumb, do not call yourself stupid, and do not call yourself an idiot. Be curious, not critical. So I'm going to halt there. If anyone, I have more to tell you, but I want to open it up to callers. So if anyone would like to call in and talk with me about anything food, weight, or body image related, the number is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. I would love to talk to you. All right. Next word, I call it the N-word. Normal. Normal is a terrible word. I once had this picture that I posted on Instagram, and it was one of those e-cards, and it shows a girl and her mom folding laundry, and the girl says, so, Mom, what's normal? And the mother says, and I love this, she says, oh, it's just a setting on the dryer, honey. If only that were the case, because people ask me all the time. They say like, oh, is this normal? Am I normal? Is he normal? Is she normal? What's normal? And I tell them the same thing, which is I really have no idea what normal is. No clue what normal is. I mean, I've heard about these so-called normal people, but they seem to only exist on sitcoms, and I have yet to actually meet one. And I include myself in that, by the way. So, you know, how do you define normal? Well, according to the dictionary, normal means conforming to a standard, usual, typical, or expected. So obviously there are some standards of behavior and ethics in our society that are expected and typical, and behavior outside that isn't quote-unquote normal. But I'm talking about the word normal when it's applied to a range of thoughts, emotions, beliefs, ideas, wishes, and all of that, that people are always questioning, you know, am I normal? Is this normal? And so much of that has to do with the culture we live in and the people around us. Like, I know someone who was raised in an Orthodox religious community, and she did something that wasn't allowed in her community at all, which is that she questioned their Bible. And this was not normal, and this was not allowed. In her particular community, it was viewed as very, very wrong, and she was basically excommunicated from this religious organization. She ended up moving and finding a different, less orthodox, more flexible religious community in which questioning was encouraged. So in that community, she fit right in. In that community, the very same behavior, which was questioning something in the Bible, was normal and accepted and good. So it's all very relative and contextual. So don't judge your thoughts, your behaviors, your feelings, and your beliefs as normal or abnormal. Think instead about what's right for you, and again, assuming that what's right for you does not hurt you or others, and let that be the guide. If it's right for you, it's right. Forget the N-word. If you feel like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, it's not that there's something wrong with you. It's that you need to find a square hole. Once again, those phone lines, it's 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. Don't be shy. I would love to talk with you about whatever is going on in your mind and help you out if I can. All right. Next word is ridiculous, as in don't be ridiculous. Ridiculous means deserving or inviting derision or mockery. It means absurd. Of course, this very definition is suspect because what factors... Oh, there's a caller. Hold on. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Who's this?
Hi, Dr. Nina. This is Nick.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I have an interesting thing going on, somewhat what you're saying. I try really hard to do these things to get myself healthy because I for months I was not doing so well. I know I do with the scale. I dealing with a relative that's not doing well, and I'm trying to get my body back and getting healthy, feeling good, walking and so on. And I have a relative, a very close relative, who fights me and makes fun of me. And hurts me with their comments. You know, I can go into some that are really nasty. Here are some that aren't as nasty, but they still hurt me. I mean, he'll call me in the morning and say, oh, did you walk to the car and back into the house today? And he called that a walk because the doctor wants me to walk and I'm doing it. Or he'll say, how do you know how many steps you take if you don't have a Fitbit on your wrist?
Well,
and I said, well, actually, I worked it out with the doctor, and instead of going with the steps, I'm going with minutes, timing how far I go. And he'll write back, and say, boy, you're really something. You should write a book of excuses.
Wow,
That's
disrespectful
and
rude.
A ton of them, but but and some I wouldn't read because he's nasty, you know. He says, you know, you're such a baby over this. He says, didn't you, last one I'll tell you real quickly is, how did the walk go this morning and tonight? And he knows damn well that I walk at night after dinner. And I said, you know, I only walk at night. And he said, boy, classic you, really classic you, left it and never said anything else.
Okay, so this person is being, is obviously has a lot of rage, anger, something, hostility. The word that comes to me as you're telling me this person is so hostile. Do you mind sharing, is this a close relative? Is this a person, who is this person to
it's
you?
My son.
It's
my
your son. My engineer is saying that Nick is saying that you should block his number. And I think anyone out there, you know, would really feel for you that your son would be so mean to you, so hostile, so rude. And he's also trying to take a position of power. Like, he's acting like a really mean dad.
He's really a mean guy. I mean, what happens sometimes is I could tick him off. He said to me the other day about something, I gave him an answer, and he says, you're really a baby, okay? And I said, if we're going to do this, please, no name-calling. And that just ticked him off, and he started going on to other things. I mean, he's just, I don't know what it triggers. I think you're right. There's got to be something else that's bothering him.
Is he a baby? Because sometimes when people are hostile to other people and call them names and say they're a baby and they're not doing something, everything is about what you're doing or not doing. Is he someone who is kind of not doing stuff in his life? No, I mean, I'm not talking about walking. I'm talking about just living his life. Would you say that he's someone who is effective in his life, or is he someone who's just not really doing what he needs to do?
I don't know. I don't know, and I really don't know what he's doing, to be honest with you.
You don't know what kind of a job he has?
I just don't know. You know, a job, I think he's in the marijuana business. If he asked me the truth, not illegally, but legally, and he's got a lot of free time on his hands. And
I'm going to guess that instead of telling himself that he needs to stop being a baby, instead of telling himself, this is wild analysis, but I'm going with it anyway. Instead of telling himself that he needs to kind of get a move on, maybe, you know, a move on in life, that he's putting that all on you, displacing it all on you. But whatever the reason, Nick, this is not okay. I also have another thought, which is you call in every week, and every week you report these wonderful changes. You know, you couldn't go on a walk, and now you're walking. You couldn't imagine life without being on the scale. Then you stop weighing yourself. All of these really significant changes that you're making and that you're sharing with us, and I'm super happy for you. But sometimes when somebody changes for the better, other people in their lives try to get them to change back. I'll give you a quick example. I once treated a man who had been married for a long time, was like 100 pounds overweight, and his weight was the problem in the marriage. And that was the problem. His weight was the problem, and his wife just was nagging him all the time, lose weight, lose weight. You're going to have a heart attack and die. Lose weight, you know, for all these reasons. So he loses weight. And when he loses weight, he loses 100 pounds. Suddenly his weight is not the problem anymore. And now, you know, he's starting to look at what's going on in the marriage and maybe thinking there's something she can change about herself too. And that's when she started baking him chocolate chip cookies because he'd done so well. He'd done so well losing 100 pounds. I made you these cookies, right? What was she doing? She was trying to get him to change back because that, for whatever reason, was a more comfortable place for her. So I'm just wondering if there's something, you know, that your son gets out of you being in a compromised position, because he's acting like he's in this superior place and he can tell you, he can judge how many, what you're doing, and it's nasty. It's just downright nasty, as you know, and unacceptable. So maybe you should, maybe you should not, maybe you should tell him you will not be answering any questions about your walking or anything that you are doing. And if he'd like to ask how you are feeling, you'd be happy to speak to that. But that you will no longer be you know, responding to anything, that any of these questions about, well, what are you doing and how much. And if he continues to be nasty and say hostile things, that you will not be, you know, texting at all. Or maybe that's too much, but, you know, setting some kind of boundaries. Because that's very painful. What are you doing with your feelings about this?
Yeah. Well, another issue to deal with.
Well, all right. But no, I legitimately am asking you that question. Like, when he does this, I find myself feeling angry on your behalf. You know, I feel myself being like, oh, that's horrible and hurtful. And so when you, right. I mean, what do you do with, how are you talking to your, today I'm talking about how not to talk to yourself. How are you talking to yourself about this hurtful situation?
Yeah. Well, thank you all.
You want some help? You want some help? I think you need to do remember my VARY acronym, V-A-R-Y. So validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. So I think that it can just be helpful to say, hey, this hurts, but it's not always, this is painful, this is upsetting, it's not always going to feel this way, and then take steps to protect yourself. And I'm very sorry that you're going through this.
Yeah. Okay. All I can say is I have to, it's just there, I got to deal with it. And my son, it's not like something I can just walk away from 100%.
Right. You can also ask him what, you can also speak to the hostility. But I suspect, given what you've told me, that he's not going to be open to having a discussion about it. But I might say to him, not in a text, why so hostile? What yeah. You know, you, as my 9-year-old says, you're not the boss of me. He's acting like he's the boss of you. I'd be like, hey, kiddo, you're not the boss of me.
Oh, that's a good line to use anyways.
Well, you know, use it and, you know, keep us posted. Let's see what happens.
I'll try anything.
Yeah, try that. Let's see what happens.
Thank you, Dr. Nina.
You're welcome, Nick. Thanks for calling and letting us know how you're doing.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. How perfect that I was just talking about the word ridiculous, because that is ridiculous. Oh, my God. Ugh, so horrible when people who ought to be, you know, in a perfect, ideal world, people who ought to be the most supportive and loving and kind and understanding people in our lives can sometimes be the most cruel and hurtful. But that is ridiculous. Nick's son, if you're listening to this, cut that out. You're not the boss of him. Okay, so back to ridiculous. I think that we just covered what is ridiculous. It is ridiculous for a son to ask how many steps his father has taken to the car and back and mock him and say everything that he apparently is saying and be rude and hostile. But you know what? The word ridiculous, people are often told they're ridiculous, not for what they're doing, but for how they're feeling. I know someone who once told her father that she liked a movie that he did not like. She said, well, I liked it. And he told her, don't be ridiculous. Like, oh, how ridiculous it is that you have your own mind and your own separate opinion. How crazy, how strange, how ridiculous. So if you're expressing how you think or feel, if you're expressing what you want or need, how is that ridiculous? And that is a totally rhetorical question, because guess what? It is never ridiculous to express your thoughts and your feelings. They are yours, and you get to own them and have them without judgment from anyone else or even from yourself. Next word is should. Okay, how many times have you told yourself, I should not do that, I shouldn't have eaten that, I shouldn't want to eat that, I should be better at this, I should get a better job, I should have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, I should be married by now. Should. Should is a word that makes us feel bad. Even if you say, I should be happy about that, or I should be happier, it kind of implies you're not as happy as you could be, and somehow it's wrong. Like, you're not living up to some happiness potential. And often, when we use the word should, we speak to ourselves in second person, as if someone else is talking to us. You shouldn't have eaten that. You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't want that. You should do better. So the word should, whether you're saying I or you, the word should causes us to direct anxiety, anger, sadness, and distress towards ourselves. And those feelings can be so powerful that you might turn to food just to get away from your own mean voice that's shoulding on you. A professor of mine used to say, don't should on yourself, which was very cute. Don't should on yourself. Instead, be interested in your thoughts and your emotions rather than judgmental. Be curious, not critical, and you will feel better about yourself. And when that happens, guess what? You will not eat for comfort and distraction. Next word, try. If you're trying to lose weight or trying to stay healthy or you're trying to do online dating, or I guess now it's not online, it's apps. You're trying to write a book, trying to write a script, trying to find the courage to leave your spouse, then you're stuck, you know, because trying doesn't exist. If you ever saw the original Star Wars series, there's a famous scene in The Empire Strikes Back when Luke Skywalker first meets Yoda. You guys know I'm a huge Star Wars geek, so I love when I can bring Star Wars into my work. So Luke's fighter plane is stuck in the muck, and he has to move the plane with his mind. So he tells Yoda that he's going to give it a try. And Yoda says, and I will spare you the Yoda impression because do it I cannot. Yoda says, try not. Do or do not. There is no try. And that is so true. If I drop a pen in front of you and say, hey, try to pick up that pen, you either pick it up or you don't. You can't try to break up with someone. You can't try to meet someone new. You can't try to stop smoking. You either do it or you don't. And the same thing with losing weight. If you're always trying instead of actually doing it, then you need to look at what's stopping you from meeting your weight loss goals. And it could be one of two things that consciously may not even resonate with you. One is you could be afraid of failure, and the other is that you could be afraid of success. I'm going to tell you about those in a second, but I want to open up the lines again to anyone who'd like to call in. 818-602-4929. It's 818-602-4929. Okay, so if you're trying, but always in a state of trying, and you just cannot get where you want to go, and it could be losing weight, and it could be anything in your life that you want, any goals that you have, there could be unconscious, out of awareness, but not out of operation, fears of failure or success. So fear of failure usually has to do with our identity and our sense of self. You know, there's a big difference between failing and being a failure. One has to do with what you're doing or not doing, and the other has to do with you as a person. So let's say two people, let's call them Vicky and Victor. They both apply for a job. Neither one of them gets it. So Vicky says, I'm so bummed I didn't get that job. Hopefully I'll get the next one. And she goes on with her life. She applies for more positions. Victor says, oh, I'm a total failure because I didn't get the job. I'm a loser. I suck at life. I'm never going to get to where I want to go. So now he's upset. He's calling himself a loser and a failure, which is just going to make him feel worse about himself. And what do you think's going to happen next? Well, maybe Victor is going to eat for comfort because he feels such shame about himself. And he has no vocabulary or means to make himself feel better with words. So fear of failure is this kind of pervasive sense of shame. So it's not that you've failed to achieve a goal. It's that you're a failure as a person. That's how it feels. And that's unbearable. And so that is so unbearable to feel as if there's something wrong with you that it might prevent you from making an effort in the first place. After all, if Victor doesn't apply for the job, he won't feel like a failure when he doesn't get it. So if fear of failure is keeping you stuck, then it's important to challenge the idea that you are a failure if you fail. Maybe it's easier not to put 100% effort into losing weight or being healthy or anything else, which pretty much guarantees failure, than it is to feel like a failure if you go all in, 100%, 110%, and you don't meet your goal. So that's one thing to think about. The other fear that might stop you from keeping a place of trying and stopping you from having or achieving or fulfilling whatever goal it is that you have is fear of success. And this is the one that people have the most trouble with. They're like, fear of success? What's that? I want to succeed. Here's a caller. Hold that thought. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Who's this?
Yeah, Dr. Nina. This is Larry. How are you?
Hi, Larry from Burbank.
Yes. Good guess. Yeah, you know, I have a question about putting out fires, and I mean that figuratively. For example, just a half an hour ago, I found out I didn't get a job, actually a promotion, that I really wanted and was really looking forward to. And right now, what would really fix my problem, quote-unquote, would be a nice German chocolate cake. And by that, I don't mean a piece of German chocolate cake. I mean 2 hours of a German chocolate cake. So what do you have to tell folks just to put out that fire?
I think that it's difficult to think about it in this way, because what you're doing, the fire is the disappointment. What's the fire? Let's use the talk about the experience of finding this out. Disappointed. What else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, disappointed, and beyond that, it's just a lot of disappointment. I think that I sort of look in the future and say, well, I will always be, and what I'm doing is kind of lying to myself. I will always be in such and such a job, or I'll always be this, or I'll always be that, and it's rooted in, you know, it's my inability to be grateful for what I do have in the moment versus what I want.
Okay, so right there, you said a couple of things that are interesting. One is your inability to be grateful. Well, you know what? You get to be upset. You get to be disappointed and crushed and highly bummed about this. You get to have that. Telling yourself that you should be grateful for everything that you have is like dismissing the and maybe you'll get to that, but down the line. Immediately to put out the fire, you've got to recognize what the fire is. Yes, I'm disappointed. Yes, I'm crushed. Yes, I'm so upset. Whatever it is for you. And then what you're doing, so the other thing I noticed is that you then go to an interpretation about the future. That because you did not get this now, you are forever going to be stuck in this type of job or whatever you're telling yourself. So sort of catastrophic thinking about the future. So if you can just stay with the painful feelings and acknowledge them. And maybe you're mad too. Who knows what you're feeling? I'd be mad if I didn't get a job that I maybe thought I was going to get, and disappointed, and a range of different feelings that you have. Allow yourself to acknowledge them. How do you get rid of feelings? By identifying them and feeling them and expressing them. And then you won't do what you won't need German chocolate cake, because that is just something that is, you know, a diversion. And the other thing is to make sure that you do not interpret that what this means about your future.
Think
about it this. I like to say the antidote for fear, which is what if I'm always in this kind of a job? What if all of those things? The antidote to fear is reality. So reality is what is. So tell yourself what is. And forget about the gratitude stuff. Forget that. You know, you don't have to be grateful for what you have. You get to be upset that you didn't get the job you wanted. So what is what?
Well, it's a job that is, you know, it's a job that I currently have that is kind of soul-sucking. Not kind of. However, in terms of gratitude, it's what's really helping is going back just 6 months and seeing that I had no staff job and that the writing, freelance writing that I was doing was a lot less. So I have more, and I would have given anything for this job, this particular job, and that still applies if I go back and see where I was. So I think that kind of gratitude really helps.
Well,
it's not just denial. It's like, yeah. I'm better off than I was.
So that is part of reality. That's what is. Hey, I'm not where I was. I'm not where I want to be, but I'm not where I was. I look at how far I've come. See, when you start looking into the future and it's a bleak, terrible future, then you're going to want to just get away from those thoughts. But it's just fear. It's just a what if. It's an interpretation. Mm-hmm. You didn't get this job. All that means is you didn't get this promotion. That's all it means. It doesn't mean anything about your future. You still have the capacity to create the future that you want.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, it really is. And, you know, I don't know what the future is. I mean, all considering, I'm not that devastated. I had a feeling that it wasn't going to happen. But, you know, c'est la vie, as they say in Paris, and I'm actually okay with the way I feel. It's just stuffing the feelings with all the cake and all of that doesn't do anything. I'll just get a stomach ache, and it won't do anything when the sugar rush is done, I guess.
So I think that you got to look at what that cake would be symbolically. It would it would be sweetness, comfort, fill a void.
You know what? Conversely, if I got the job, I'd be so stoked. I'd say, "Let's celebrate with some German chocolate cake."
But you maybe know, not a half day of German chocolate cake.
Say again.
But maybe not a couple of hours with German chocolate cake, as you said before.
Yeah, just maybe four pieces instead. But you know, you're right. I think part of it also would be I may find myself eating crunchy food all of a sudden for no reason, for quote no reason. But you know, if that feeling comes up, the anger that will come up, and you know whether that's out of my hands. But just knowing that the future that I'm seeing right now isn't real, and all I have is current reality.
Yeah, so you want to think about it, a metaphorical ladder. And by the way, for those of you who don't know my food mood formula, what Larry was saying was that crunchy foods are, he said, anger. Crunchy foods are correlated with anger. Think about a metaphorical ladder, and which is sort of what you're referencing. You look down into the past and you see where you were, and you see how far up you've come that ladder, how many rungs that you have climbed up that ladder. And you look at the difference between what was and what is, and you say, wow, I've really come a long way. And you mm-hmm. want, you want to trust that you're going to get, you're going to keep climbing the ladder. You're going to get up to the future. But you also want to just sort of be where you are and balance all those things. And be careful not to make assumptions about your future based on one job that you did not get.
Mm-hmm. And my tendency in the past has been to look at the future where it goes down one very dark rabbit hole. That's not happening now at all. It's just, well, you know, it's really too bad. However, .. And the job that I currently have, anyway, may be better hours for the writing I want to work on. So that's not just sour grapes, you know, or sour chocolate cake. I mean, it's true.
It sounds like a silver lining. It sounds like you're finding... Yeah.
Say again? Sorry.
It sounds like you're finding the silver lining.
Yeah, yeah, and keeping some balance. But like you say, the suggestion to stay in the moment and feel what comes up and acknowledge it and keep moving forward is better than stuffing my feelings with food.
And think about what you'd say to a friend or someone you really cared about who was kind of pumped and hoping that he was going to get this job and didn't. You, mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain that you would not say, "Hey, here's some German chocolate cake. Go to town." I think that you...
No, I'd probably just say, "I knew you had no chance." No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I mean, to treat them the way I would. It would, you know, I'm very harsh to myself, and that, I think, is human nature.
Well, it's something that some people learn, and for various reasons. But when you often, I find that people treat themselves either the way they were treated, or in some harsh way. For I won't even get into why. But they treat other people the way they would like to have been treated or to be treated. And so, think about that. What would you say? You wouldn't say to a friend, "Oh, well, your future is over now because you didn't get this job." You'd say what?
Right. Yeah, that, you know, it happens. There were 8 applicants. You're just one person. And it really boils down to whether or not they like you and not your qualifications. And Lord knows you had a ton of them, you know. I'd be curious to see what my... quote, enabler downstairs will say when I tell her what kind of food will be presented. But I've got that on my mind. You know, we'll see. It's kind of interesting.
Okay, but you have to do one other thing, which is just say, "Yeah, it was." It's it, instead of, "Oh, they didn't like me as much as they liked other people," which is basically what you said. You also got to just say, attend to the feeling part of it. This is disappointing. This is really... you know, I'm kind of crushed. Just, you have to acknowledge the feeling part of it and not go into that intellectual, "This is why it happened."
Yes.
And
yeah,
that's
just
how you put out the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
I'm
okay.
Very sorry you didn't get it, but I'm glad that you can see the silver lining. But I want you to experience that disappointment, because when you do, it will be diminished and eventually go away. Otherwise, the fire will keep, you know, coming back.
It's sort of a microcosm of feelings that I need to tap into to get forward in general. So it's kind of an opportunity. Let's do contrary action and feel for once. And, you know, that's all true.
Well, let us know how it goes.
I will certainly do that.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
You know, it takes courage to feel when we live in a culture that says don't feel. And when you're a guy, especially, you know, "Hey, don't feel your feelings, be strong." I mean, we're all told that, right? We're either overtly or covertly, "Be strong. Feeling your feelings is weak. You should be able to not feel them." And all it does is just deny your humanity and make you feel bad about yourself. So my proverbial hat is off to Nick and Larry and everyone else out there who's having the courage to look inward express what is going on inside instead of turning to food to escape the feeling, because it's a temporary escape. You know, when you feel your feelings, it's not so wonderful, but then it's over and you're done, and they diminish, as opposed to, nope, I'm going to be strong. I'm not feeling those stupid feelings. And then they just sort of linger and fester, and then they're always following you around, and it's all too much. So, you know, that's how you put out that fire. Feeling leads to healing. All right, I have 6 more minutes, so I'm going to keep telling you about fear of success. Although, if someone else wants to call in, 818-602-4929. All right, so fear of success. It has to do with worrying that if you achieve your goal, that somehow things will get worse instead of better, or that you don't deserve it, something like that. And so fear of success can come from many different, there are many roots to it: expectations, impulsivity, objectification, even fear of happiness, and one other, which I'm actually going to talk about because it's not often talked about. And that is that when you feel the feeling of excitement, it's actually very similar to trauma. Let me explain that. So anxiety and excitement are closely related. And so sometimes when you feel excitement, it can bring up anxiety. Like, okay, I have an example. So I have a friend who's a performer, and she takes a lot of acting classes, and she's a great actress, but she gets really nervous, really, really, really anxious in her auditions. And so her acting coach told her to keep in mind that the physiological experience of nervousness and anxiety is nearly identical to the experience of excitement. So he said, hey, when you feel nervous, tell yourself, you're just excited. You get to have an audition. Woo! Well, you know, it didn't work because obviously she couldn't like make that switch. You can't talk yourself out of what you're feeling. She tried to reframe it, but just didn't work. She actually had to work through why she got nervous at auditions, which is a whole other story. But anyway, the principle is the same in reverse. Excitement is therefore physiologically nearly the same as anxiety. So if you're excited and happy, you're successful, woo, you got what you wanted, it's a great feeling, it could actually bring up anxiety. And so you have to work through the original anxiety so you don't avoid the excitement of success. Something that, you know, I don't really hear anyone else talking about, but it's pretty pervasive. So here are some other examples. So fear of success in terms of expectations. You may think that by changing your body, you're going to change your life. But what if that doesn't happen? What if everything in your life stays exactly the same? Maybe that level of disappointment would just be too much to risk. So you stay in that place of wanting success or wanting a change, but you can't let yourself have it because you're afraid that if you have it, it's just not going to measure up to the fantasy. The other reason for fear of success is impulsivity. Maybe you're afraid you're going to be impulsive if you're happy with yourself. Here are some of the things people have told me that they're afraid will happen. They're afraid they're going to leave their husband if they lose weight. And they're successful at losing weight. These are the things that they're afraid of. One person said she was afraid she would leave her husband. Another one said he was going to cheat on his wife. Another one wanted to take risks at work. They thought, like, oh, if I lose weight, then I'm gonna do this at work, and that kind of thing. So that was scary to them, and so that made them stay stuck in not being successful. So dealing with the wish to do all those things, like if you're afraid you're gonna leave your husband, there's a reason, and you need to look at that and not make it contingent upon weight loss or cheat on your wife. Like, why? Something's wrong. It needs your attention in the present. Another fear of success with weight loss is objectification. So a lot of people are afraid of what will happen if they're perceived as more attractive to other people. If will they be objectified? Will people like them for their body but not for themselves? Will they become a thing and not a person? Especially with people who have been traumatized by some kind of abuse in the past, that is a very common fear. And then last, the fear of success is fear of happiness. So there, a few years ago, there was a Special K commercial that said, "Hey, what will you gain when you lose?" Now, I should say, you know, I have a problem with this, which is the supposition that you can only gain happiness if you lose weight. But as much as you intellectually know this isn't the case, maybe you unconsciously believe it to be so. So if you're telling yourself you'll be happier once you lose weight, once you stop binging, but you never seem to be able to do that, then maybe you're afraid to be happy. Often people say, what are you crazy? Of course I want to be happy. But you know what? Sometimes people are afraid of happiness because they're going to be too happy, the rug will be pulled out from underneath them, or that they don't deserve it. There are all kinds of reasons, which I will get to in a future show. So for now, I will say thank you so much for joining me here today. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. Visit me at winthedietwar.com or find out about my program at kickthedietshabit.com. And I would love to hear from you. So send me a message on Twitter or Facebook or email me with any questions that you'd like me to cover on the show, or call in next week. See you then.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.